Hey guys, welcome to the Twisted Sisterhood podcast hosted by Ashley Mitchell and Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, a podcast by birth moms for birth moms to give a platform to a silenced voice in the triad. You can find us on Instagram at Twisted Sisterhood Podcast, Facebook at Twisted Sisterhood, and Twitter at Birth Mom Podcast. Give us a follow and use our hashtag There Goes the Sisterhood. And if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. Welcome back to the Twisted Sisterhood podcast. I'm your co-host, Kelsey Vandervliet Ranyard, and my other co-host is here. She's in Sacramento.
Yes, yes. Flew in from Salt Lake to come and get some episodes on the books. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, welcome back. Today, we are talking about the three R's for birth moms.
Yeah.
Roles, rights, and responsibilities. Ashley, we hear a lot of times from birth moms that they're just not sure where they fit into this equation. So where do they fit into this equation?
Well, you know, I think when you're looking at, and we're going to be talking more specifically about open adoption.
Right.
For the roles, rights, and responsibilities.
But also reunion.
And reunion. Yeah. And being in reunion. But I think we are told you go through your pregnancy and you have this baby and then you relinquish your rights.
You're terminate free.
Your parental rights.
Right.
And to people that don't understand or know anything else, what they know is they are cut off at that point. Mm-hmm. That's done. Their job is done.
Right.
In this picture. You have done your job and now you're done. But that's just the pregnancy.
Right.
The relationship continues on past that. And when we say adoption is for life, we're not kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Because it never ends. It's the gift that keeps on giving all day, every day.
Is it a gift?
Maybe it's a bag of shit on your front porch. Is that a gift?
It's on fire.
Yeah, that's what we set fire to. So the understanding that just because you relinquish your parental rights and it's hammered into your head, mm-hmm. You have no rights. You don't have a say on how they're raised, their medical choices, their sports that they're going to play, the doctors that they're going to go to. You have no rights to be a part of or have an opinion about any of it.
Right.
So why would you think long term that you would have a role in any of that?
Or a responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the big misconceptions, and it's something that we're not told, but we should be told pre-birth, pre-adoption. We don't think that we have any responsibility, but the truth is that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We carry a lot of responsibility, and sometimes it's really unforeseen, especially in the early years. And these are really hard lessons that birth moms are learning, and we don't want this to be a hard lesson. We want you to know right away, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
We want you to know before you even make a choice, and we want that to help you make a more informed decision. Whatever that decision is, we want you to be informed about these roles, rights, and responsibilities before you make that decision so you know what you're getting into. Yeah.
And if you can commit to it.
Yes. Yes, totally. So I'm going to read you a little snippet from my book, Adoption Unfiltered. It comes out December 1st. I hope you'll read it. It would mean a lot to me. So I'm just going to read to you about my little snippet on our duty to our kids. Being an outsider is a persistent gut feeling for birth mothers. Nevertheless, we carry a responsibility to stick around through awkward times. However, sometimes birth mothers don't have a rebuttal for the voices in their heads urging them to run. The remedy for this is not always simple, but a commitment is required by all. Transparent and informative pre-adoption education, effective and continuing post-placement support, and an adoptive family that doesn't give up on them. Birth mothers must be told that they are not a fleeting particle, but instead an essential piece of the composition that is this child's opportunity to feel whole. Mm. Wow, who wrote that? She's so good.
Wow, that is so poetic.
But it's true. I think we don't realize in those early years what they will need from us, what they may need and they may not. I mean, it's such an individual process, an individual experience that we can't sit here and tell you they will need X, Y, Z from you, but we have to tell you the possibilities, because if they do need it, you got to be there. You got to provide.
Yeah. You know, we talked a little bit about stigma and stuff and stereotypes in the last one. And I say all the time that I wasn't brave because I placed. But I think I'm really brave when I show up for 17 years in these really, really hard spaces, because a lot of times I don't want to. I don't want to be there. I don't actually want to have some of the visits that
we
have.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. And we hear a lot.
So the bravery and strength comes through the long-term commitment in the aftermath. But I didn't know that that was going to be expected.
We hear a lot sometimes from adoptive parents. And Ashley is guilty of this, I know, because she told me. But adoptive parents will say, like, she didn't show up to the visit. We planned this visit and she just didn't show up. She just ghosted us. And that is... in my mind, I think it's pretty unacceptable. However, you got to keep going back.
Yeah.
It's okay to mess up sometimes. You go apologize. You fess up. You grovel. You get back in the game.
Yeah.
We all have hard moments and anxiety that cripples us.
Yeah.
And so I think that you have to keep showing up, even if you haven't before.
Yeah.
Ashley, tell us more about those first 5 years and... that turning point for you. What was the catalyst for jumping back in? And just remind us, you know, what were the difficulties of jumping back in? What were your barriers? And when did it get better?
Well, I'll let you know.
When will it get better?
When it'll get better. I'll let you know if that ever happens. So there were some very specific things for me that happened and I can pinpoint all of those in 17 years, because they were very significant moments that catapulted us into the next level of our relationship. Because I can promise you, all of the agreements and conversations that you have at birth aren't going to be what they look like. Right. Because we've had relationships with humans.
Right.
It's constantly evolving, constantly changing, constantly compromising, because that's what you do for the people that you love.
Yeah.
And so for the first 5 years for me, I mean, I changed my phone number, I don't know how many times, in and out of relationships, in and out of apartments. I had no contact. They would want to go to meet at the park and then I wouldn't show up and then I wouldn't talk to them. I mean, I was in all of those things for 5 years.
Right.
So very significant, very first big moment was the birth of John and I's daughter, Ty.
Right.
When we were married and we had our daughter, we had still had no real open adoption contact. We were still, LDS Family Services was still acting as the middleman. Mm-hmm. So correspondence was getting sent to them and then it was either getting passed on or not.
Right.
So there was no direct contact at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my daughter.
Yeah.
And that came with a whole bag of crap, but...
Sorry, Ty
knows. We love you, Ty. But that absolutely woke something that had been buried deep for a very long time. And it was just this pull that I could just not ignore anymore. I had to reach back out.
Right.
And that was very significant. And so that was... I didn't know what that was going to look like. I didn't even know if they would give me a yes, because I had...
Well, you didn't even know if they remembered you, which is so funny to me now.
I know. I know.
Ashley wrote this letter to them and said, "Hi, I'm Ashley. I don't know if you remember me." Like, they adopted your baby. Like, they
were my kid. You. But what do you say? Like, it's
They'd be
so...
like, "Sorry, I'm not sure who you are."
Yeah. Oh,
this
new
crazy lady is contacting us.
It was... but what do you say? It's so awkward.
Yeah, it is awkward. It's so
and
awkward.
And I had been a real... pain in the butt for them.
Yeah.
And I had caused them a lot of worry and sleepless nights and stress.
For sure.
And so I was asking a lot to come back into the picture.
Yeah.
And so when I reached out in that email, I mean, they were immediately on it.
Yeah.
Because they knew that I was going to matter, or that I mattered.
Right.
So I reached back out and we had our first visit at a Chick-fil-A when Derek was like five and a half. And it was crazy. And I had a daughter.
Yeah.
I was
so you all went?
It was me and my daughter and
then
and Derek and his mom.
Okay.
And then the next visit after that, they met my husband.
Okay. Wow. That's big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a very significant, just being able to come back into the picture. And we talk all the time, you know, silence doesn't mean stop. Like, this isn't to say, like, adoptive parents don't get to still do the work and keep reaching out and keep showing up. But this very significant, birth moms need to reach out.
Yeah.
If I would not have come back into the picture.
This part of the podcast, we'd like adoptive parents to just scroll through. Don't listen to this. This is not a message to you. And this is not an excuse. A get out of jail free card. Yeah. We still think with the power dynamic that you have responsibility to reach out as much as possible. Yeah. But with birth moms, we're just talking to birth moms. If you ever heard from them, you need to reach out.
Yeah.
I think that that's something that you owe to your child and yourself too. Yeah. And I think to get that courage to reach out and try to connect and try to keep that flame lit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, and, you know, I had done, you know, to be transparent, I had done a ton of work. I'd been done a ton of therapy. I had been on meds. I had balanced a few things where I felt like I was in a healthier space, not healed, but in a healthier space where I could be safe and I could commit. Mm-hmm. Because then the next years where we had to rebuild trust. Trust had been broken.
Totally.
And I had to own the fact that I was the one that broke the trust.
Totally. And it's also possible too that the adoptive parents have broke the trust and you're listening to this and you're like, well, I wasn't the one that broke the trust. It was them. Okay, well then, same thing for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to come back and then we had to rebuild.
Yeah.
And they had to know that they could trust that, especially with Derek being older. Is she going to show up when she says she is? Yes, I am. And I had to prove that over and over and over.
Right. Yeah. And I think openness, Lori Holden wrote a book about open adoption, the open-hearted way to open adoption. And she's really talks about the concept of openness over the over just having contact as your measurement for openness, for open adoption. Openness is something that you can be honoring even if you don't have contact. You can remain open to your child and to giving your child what they need when they need it, if they need it. That's something that you can practice as a birth parent. And adoptive parents, openness is something in your home that you're honoring every day. You're honoring their origins.
Yeah.
You're
allowing connection to their...
You're talking about their birth family. You're talking about their adoption. You're opening yourself up to answer any questions. You're fostering conversations, especially early on when they may not be coming to you with questions. You're fostering those conversations early on so that they know that you're a safe person to talk about those things with.
I think one of the other really big significant things that really, really kind of shattered what I thought open adoption was, because it really was about the two parents, the adoptive parent and biological parent in our situation, were calling all the shots and navigating this relationship.
Yeah.
And I believe that that was open adoption.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until Derek was 10 and he reached out himself.
Yeah.
On his mom's phone.
Right.
Which means he went to his mom and said, spoke the words, I miss Ashley. Can I text her?
Right.
So he is now asking for what he wants.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was like, open adoption is about giving Derek what he wants.
You know,
and
that,
it's not about us.
You know that saying that's like, babies don't keep?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, I think that the alarm of that statement is so much more in adoption because you have all of these people, these adults that have made these decisions for this child because that's what happens. We make decisions for our children when they are, you know, not able to do it themselves.
Yeah.
But then we have to let this progression happen. And we cannot stunt that growth for them. They, as they get older and they begin to form their own opinions and they make their own decisions, they have to become that governing voice in their own adoption relationship and arrangement.
Yeah. So the transition is supposed to look like the adoptive parents and biological parents or family, whoever's involved on the biological side, lays that foundation and does the work so that when the child is starting to get older and to be able to ask, then we start to give them the things that they need and that they're right. asking for and showing up in spaces that they want.
Right.
And then we transition into less and less of the adoptive parent control. The adoptee's voice is the governing voice and the biological parents are there when
yes.
needed.
And neither adoptive parents and neither birth parents are contributing to some sort of tug of war.
Yeah.
We don't
That's right.
we don't demand loyalty. We don't demand
yeah.
taking sides. We're there.
We're there. And we're there that's for the it. Child.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Team Derek.
Oh yeah.
I mean that's where this transition
I'm
has
team
to
Derek.
Go.
I'm Team Derek.
Yeah. That's where that transition has to go. Where
yeah.
I think it is easy. We really do kind of feel like we have to build these loyalties or choose sides
no.
or have adoptive parent relationships.
And that's actually one of the most detrimental things
yes.
that adult adoptees talk about is that feeling of having to choose sides. We want to mitigate that as much as possible. I
yeah.
do think that there are some of those feelings that are inherent with adoption. They come with it, that thought that, oh, do I go here or there? But we want to mitigate that as much as possible and let them know that we're just here.
Yeah.
You're you, I'm me.
Yeah.
I'm here for you.
Yeah. I'm yeah. here for you.
For sure.
Well, and you see that, you know, all the time when you have adoptive parents that are even trying to, if you have like, I see this all the time with families have a birth father that wants to be in the picture,
mm-hmm.
but the mom doesn't want him there.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't get
That's
to cut out
point.
A biological connection.
That. Nope, you don't.
Because you have your
you
own
got beef with him.
You have your own beef. You don't get to do that. So everyone gets to be there that
oh, yeah.
can be there.
Look, he's not my favorite guy in the world. In
yeah.
fact, he's probably my least favorite
yeah.
guy in the world. But at the end of the day, my son has half his DNA.
That's
and
right.
if that is something he wants to...
You don't get to deny him
that's
that.
That's not my...
Yeah.
No, it's not my choice. And you won't even see that on my face.
Yeah.
You won't even see any sign of dissatisfaction on my face. You won't hear it in my voice. You won't
yeah.
see it on my face. You won't see it in my body language. I am...
Yeah.
Neutral party.
And you can protect yourself and not, they
sure.
can have a separate relationship with
sure.
him than they have with you.
Yeah.
But
they
you
will.
Don't, but you don't get to gatekeep that
yeah.
relationship and narrative.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No. And it's not even something on my mind.
Yeah.
You got to get out of that
yeah.
space. And I understand too that there's so many possibilities of hurt that have come
mm-hmm.
from the birth father side, whether, you know, sexual assault,
yes.
rape. There's even situations of incest and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. I cannot stress enough how we have to be one of the adults in the relationship. Mm-hmm. We just do. And it's a really tough, it's much easier said than done, but we have to, even if you were a child when you gave birth
mm-hmm.
to, that's huge too. It's hard to get out of that stage, but when you're an adult in the relationship and there's a parent-child dynamic, whether it's birth parent-child dynamic or not, you are the parent
mm-hmm.
and you have to act accordingly.
Yeah. And that gets really tough because at some point you're going to have the obligation of sharing.
Yeah. And so what is the obligation? What is the responsibility for sharing pieces of that child's story? What is the obligation? When they ask you,
well, I think you absolutely
how was I
are required.
Conceived?
I think
yeah.
you're required to share.
Yeah. And not by law, but by morals.
Yeah. Our emotional responsibility to our children
yeah.
is to give them their information.
And the facts.
And
you
facts.
Don't have to flour it up. You don't
yeah.
have to sugarcoat it. You have to give them the facts and let them decide how they feel about
yeah.
it.
And that's been significant for me, even in my journey, as I've listened to adult adoptees,
mm-hmm.
in how much we... and. Every parent wants to protect their kids. It is who we are as
oh,
individuals.
Yeah.
We don't want to harm our children. And
no.
so we think by keeping the big bad monsters away of all the things, if we can keep them in the closet then and keep them in the dark about some of these things that we're protecting them. Adoption does not work like that.
Yeah. And I think that they can tell when they're not getting the whole story.
Yeah.
And I think that that erodes trust
yes.
between the relationship,
yes.
which I know you don't want either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but the point is really to lay that healthy foundation for the adoptee as they grow up, to have their own relationship and independence and
mm-hmm.
really have that space and that trust in between the parties to be able to go to us with questions,
yeah.
be able to go to their parents with questions.
Yeah.
And
yeah. it's not our job to muddy the water either because
no.
The foundation needs to be so neutral that the adoptee gets to have a choice, a clear choice of whether they want to be a part of this relationship or not. But if they are influenced by the way that adoptive parents are talking about the biological parents, or vice versa, if the birth parents get their children alone and they start spewing all this stuff, we have to keep it neutral for the adoptee to be able to make their own decision on who and where and how they want to participate.
And there are age-appropriate conversations.
Yes, of course.
You have to be age-appropriate.
Of course. But facts are still facts. Like, they have to be given.
Oh, I 100% agree. So what do you think your expectations were with the relationship with the adoptive parents compared to what they actually are? Or taking it out of the personal context, what do you think, how is open adoption relationships between adoptive parents and birth parents, how is that related to you versus
I think there's
what
this,
it needs to be?
You know, it's really hard because birth moms always have something to lose. So it's really hard to show up in this authenticity and really build a relationship that's really built on on being ourselves. So I think that there's a lot of you know, perfectionism and faking and hiding and things like that. We walk on these eggshells because we, if we feel like we do show up as ourselves, we have something to lose if it's rejected, which is our access to our children. So I think that there is a really, really harmful misconception that we have to be best friends and family with the adoptive parents.
And now I know that there are also maybe birth parents listening that do feel that way. And that's fine.
And that they have built that relationship.
But I think that the minimum level of relationship is mutual respect. And so you build from there and you may not build very far
and
up.
If it transitions into this beautiful, that's awesome. But that's not how it plays out for everybody. But if the foundation is a mutual love and respect and understanding for what we mean to each other and what we mean to the child, that's where it needs to
be. And that's enough.
That's enough.
That is enough. It's not bare minimum. It's enough.
Yeah, that's enough.
Yeah. But if you develop a friendly relationship with them and it becomes more,
that's great. Yeah. That's great. But the expectation isn't to come in and force yourself into these relationships to be a certain way and to act a certain way. You can still have, you know, people always all the time are like, oh my gosh, you and Lana must be such close friends. And I'm like, Lana and I have a very, very high respect for each other, but Lana and I aren't friends. Like, we don't talk.
No.
Like,
it's not
we're not
like
in each other's lives like that. But there isn't anything that I, you know, we know who we are to each other. We know who we are to Derek. And we know who we are to keep this relationship that's important going forward. But we don't hang out.
And
ours just didn't transition that way.
It's perfectly fine. And I think too, like, if you are going to be friends on, with them, I think that you need to be maybe even a little more conscious of the progression that should be happening with the adoptee, because it may be easier to get wrapped up as we're the adults, we're the adults, we're the adults. And next thing you know, at 15 years old. Whoa. Like, have you been honoring that progression? Or have you guys been just,
and I hear, you know, I hear from adoptive parents all the time that a lot of times the birth moms show more interest in hanging out with them, with the adoptive parents, than with their child. That's not because they don't care about the child, because they don't want it. They don't know how to have this relationship. It's uncomfortable.
It is hard.
They don't want to cross a line or make the adoptive parent uncomfortable. Like, and a lot of times these women are coming to the table that don't have support, that don't have other family members. Don't, and so the adoptive parents kind of step into that role for them as their kind of caregiver or support system.
Make sure that you, when you do enter those types of friendly or even like parental relationships, that you have an out, almost like you have a, you progress in that yourself. So you, you're not stationary in that, and that there's room to grow.
So I think that was a really huge thing for me, that we could do this well and have a healthy open adoption relationship without that kind of crossover. And, you know, social media has changed that and made it really hard when you have birth moms looking at these, some of these relationships that have transitioned into that, which is wonderful. that don't have that, that think they're doing something wrong.
I think one of the other expectations that I think gets it wrong for me was that the marketing of open adoption makes it seem like they're doing a favor for me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, because, and people say that too. Like, people are like, oh, you're so lucky that they let you see him. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't like you at all. And, but I think there's this expectation that, oh, this is paying me back.
Yeah.
Because we hear from adoptive moms sometimes too that they feel so guilty. They're so shrouded in guilt. They're like, how could I ever repay? You can't.
You can't repay baby
because it wasn't ever paid to you. Yeah. And it's that you're looking at adoption in the wrong frame of mind.
Is it an exchange? Is this
it's
even
not
Steven?
A gift. Yeah. It's not a, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you have to get out of that mindset. And then you have to look at open adoption in the reality. And the reality is that we're not preparing birth moms to be an active member of an open adoption relationship at all. They do not know what's expected of them. We're doing some education with adoptive parents. It's not across the board on openness, but we're only educating one side. I think that is just so silly.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to talk about that more in another episode, but open adoption is not a favor.
Yeah.
And the purpose of openness in general, I mean, openness started to kind of be more prevalent in the 90s, like sporadically, and then became more mainstream in like the 2010s, I would say. Mm-hmm. And we have not hit our stride.
No.
Because there are not protections in place.
Yeah.
And enforcements for post-adoption contact agreements, stuff like that yet. So openness started because the secrecy of Baby Scoop era and 80s and 90s and of people, you know, on the worst and people not telling their kids that they were adopted. Yeah. But even in the best circumstance, kids not even, their records are sealed and they're not allowed to know their birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
Not allowed to know them, know their name, know who they are, know where they came from, where they got their brown eyes and where they, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are the, like even beyond the appearance, medical history, ancestry, just anything about themselves, they weren't allowed to know. So openness was something to get rid of the secrecy. But what actually happened was the marketing took off in such a way that they were marketing it as being this band-aid for all of the ails of adoption and relinquishment.
Yeah.
Look, you're not even going to grieve because you're going to get to see your child again.
Yes.
That is so not fucking true. That is so beyond.
Open adoption relationship does not replace the fact that adoption happened.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't take away the traumas, the parallel traumas that we're experiencing. It doesn't take away any of that.
And it adds its own layer of complexities of trauma.
It has different hurts.
Yes.
Different hurts.
Yes.
And so, and for the child as well.
Yes.
And I think that that would be ignorant of us to not mention because we are only one side.
Yeah.
And the pain that can arise of an adoptee saying goodbye to their birth mom after a visit.
Yeah.
That's so real. We hear sometimes too from adoptive parents saying, my kid had a meltdown after a visit. And so we're just going to stop doing visits. And we're like, no.
Yeah.
If that is not something to ignore, let's get into that.
Yes.
And because that child didn't just say goodbye to his birth mom forever.
Yeah.
You're going to make it forever now because you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, the way it's marketed, still to this day, is like that. And we're trying to definitely change that because it's problematic.
Yeah, I think that's really important when you talked about not even being in our stride yet. We have no idea.
Oh, no.
We just know that openness is better than secrecy. And that's all we really know about it because it's so new that we still don't even know what, like, generations like my son, who's come over and had sleepovers and what that's going to, long-term effects are going to be with that? We have no idea.
Well, the first kids, you know, the 90s kids that are in open adoptions, and there are some that have had adoptions, that lifelong thing, they're just now, you know, they're my age, they're late 20s, early 30s. I don't know.
Yeah.
And there's not enough of them to know.
To know.
And so it's something that we kind of have to wait and see on.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, we're not collecting data.
Yeah. There's no information being
gathered. It's going to be a minute. Yeah. I know that there are some anecdotal stuff, and I think that's super important, especially when we don't have data in place.
Yes. Yes.
But like off the top of my head, I can't think of much.
Yeah.
It's just to get rid of the secrecy. It's not to get rid of the other hurts, and it presents other hurts. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea what this is going to look like.
We sit in group a lot with moms from all different lived experiences, from closed to open. And I'll tell you, almost every group, the women that have closed adoptions go, oh my gosh, I don't even know how I would handle that.
Yeah, I know. I've heard them say that too. And I'm like, ugh.
So maybe. It doesn't eliminate the harm that was caused in adoption.
Right.
And it adds its own complexities.
It does.
I think one of the other things that's so important to understand is there is not an expectation of where you fall on the scale of openness. Open adoption is open adoption. And if it's over here with information and original birth certificates and a letter and pictures, that's enough. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, the expectation is not sleepovers. My relationship transitioned into that, which is great, but that doesn't mean that if you're not having sleepovers with your child, you're doing it wrong.
Right. There's a lot of like comparisons that can be made. And I feel like I've reached certain heights in our open adoption relationship that I never would have dreamed of 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So there's no way to know. Everybody's growing at their own pace and forming, bonds. And you just wait and see. There's no telling how. I mean, you can do all the DNA, all the comparisons with your traits and your child's and the birth father's traits and your child's. And you don't know what they're going to feel like, what they're going to do, who they're going to be. You have no concept. You have to watch it happen.
Yeah.
And we watch it from afar.
Yeah.
And so it's a very like hurry up and wait and see what he's going to think, what he's going to say. Try to encourage him, but, not too much because we want him to be able to form his own opinions.
Yes. And I will take advantage of what he can and wants to give now, knowing that in 5 years that could look completely different.
And they change.
Yeah.
Just like we do.
And with my time now, especially because he's gotten older, learning from adult adoptees about, I've really had to, coming back to roles, rights, and responsibilities, I've had to check myself to not dump my hurt and my harm and my guilt onto him. He gets to come and just be.
Yes.
Because he can't be the dumping ground.
No.
For all my stuff. So that makes it hard and scary for women to show up in these spaces because they want their children to know so badly I have pain and I'm so and they don't get to do that. I have to lock that up until he leaves and my fall aparts get to happen after he's gone.
I do think that there's a circumstance where a child who maybe wants an apology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you give that. I think that you give that, but I don't think that you dump.
Yeah. You have to, again, this is about pouring into what was taken from the child.
Right.
And so our responsibility, this is information, this is helping them unpack and understand. And if they want you to go deeper with it, you go deeper with it.
Right. You do.
But that you just have to make sure that you have the support and resources in the aftermath so that you don't completely fall apart to where you can't show up again.
Right. Right. It's persistence. It's self-care. It's all of those things.
Yeah. And it gets even more complicated when you're parenting after placement because I have my kids that I parent that have very strong opinions about how they feel when their brother leaves.
Oh, yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. There's so many more people involved than what we ever thought.
Yes.
What we were ever told. Having a child now, my daughter's 2.5, has thrown a total wrench into my expectations of what adoption is going to be like for me. It's that constant, 2.5, she's talking a ton, but she's not really understanding. So, bite-sized, age-appropriate pieces to help her understand, that's what we do. It's what we'll continue to do forever with our kids. Yep. And so, but you also will see, you will witness the hurt and the pain for them as well. My dad, was adopted in 1964. Mm-hmm. He had two older sisters when he was adopted, and they remember. They were 10 and 12.
Yeah.
They remember
yeah.
their mom not coming home from the hospital with the baby that she had been caring for 9 months. My dad's sister's, my Aunt Faye, was at my house last week visiting, and that pain for her is still very real. She mm-hmm. is like in her 70s.
Yeah.
That pain is very real. And our kids are going to feel those things, and it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to work
but
through.
But that's just this constant reminder that this is just not a one
dimensional.
Yeah. And it's not just this one transaction happened and that's it.
Yeah.
This changes generations.
It does. It does. My grandma has passed now. She yeah. passed in 2021. And we still deal with yeah. Some of those things.
But I had no clue. I had no clue how much like my own kids that I was going to parent were right. going to be affected by this
right.
and how much it's changed the family tree dynamic for him. For,
right.
I mean, no one talks to you about that. So the level of openness, even the expectation of openness goes so far beyond just this one little relationship.
Right.
Just this one little letter that you're going to send at Christmas. It right. is so much bigger than that.
Yeah. I want to talk about PACAs
yeah.
for a second. We're not going to go into too much detail, but I want to dispel some of the myths about PACAs
yeah.
because ultimately we're pro PACA.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray.
Yeah.
But there's so much
tell
more involved.
Tell people what a PACA is
a
for those that don't
know.
A PACA
is a post-adoption contact agreement.
Yes.
This is typically something that you do, you work out together with the adoptive parents.
But it's basically your open
and
adoption
if you
commitments.
Have, yeah, it's your commitments to open adoption. It may seem on its face, it may seem a little silly. I know a lot of people oppose them because they think, well, it makes the relationship transactional and it, you know, it doesn't. There's an art to it, I really believe.
Yeah.
After watching...
Well, it's just accountability too.
Oh, like, totally. After watching my boss, Celeste, she's an attorney. She has a firm called True Adopt where she just represents expectant moms and gives them free representation in adoption arrangements. She's drawn up hundreds of PACAs, and there's a negotiation process to it. There's finding out what is going to work for both parties. You know, if I live in California and family lives in Massachusetts, we're not going to be visiting 12 times a year.
Yeah.
Unless,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. We're just not. There is no unless. It's not going to happen. You have to figure out what works for you. And then Celeste always puts a provision in there. We're going to come back to the table in 3 yeah. years, in 5 years.
Yeah.
And we're going to rework this because we change and we grow.
That's
and
right.
we develop in different ways. And so we want to come back and see what's working, what's not. And really... what's in that pocket is a very foundational, basic level of contact agreement. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that in my pocket agreement. I'm not saying I want to visit 10 times a year. I want pictures every week. I want XYZ. No, we're committing to maybe 2 annual visits, depending on proximity, like physical mm-hmm. proximity to each other. And we are committing to regular updates quarterly or monthly. And we're committing to mutual respect,
mm-hmm.
committing to this and that. And then this is just something that outlines the expectations
mm-hmm.
for both parties. When I placed, I got lucky in the sense that the family I picked was a pretty laid back couple. They were, you know, free to be you and me. They're going to text me every day for the first, you know, 6 months to a year. They're going to send me pictures all the time and whatever. But if I would have picked a family that wasn't like that
mm-hmm.
And I had no expectations, it would have driven me, or I had expectations of what it was going to look like,
yeah.
it would have driven me crazy and been really heartbreaking for me to not have my expectations met.
Yeah.
It feels a lot like rejection. And I think that a PACA outlines those expectations, makes everything really clear,
mm-hmm.
but also it gives you so much room to grow. And I think if you have that separate legal representation to cement your expectations, mm-hmm. but then you have that social work presence to guide that relationship mm-hmm. in a healthy way, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
That really sets you up for a successful open adoption and openness yeah. concept within that relationship.
Yeah. And when you look from, just to touch on this really quick, because we talk all the time that the intake for the pregnant moms is so different than the intake for the adoptive parents. They're having two very different conversations. So the websites are selling to the pregnant moms that you get to dictate what you want your open adoption to look like. And then they're over here telling the adoptive parents, over promise, you can under deliver, it's not going to matter. She can't do anything about it anyway. Right. So this mom is being told, come and create this like vision of open adoption, but don't worry, over here, you don't actually have to uphold any of it. Yeah. We have completely helped them fail before they even get started.
Yeah. One of the things that Celeste always says, which I always like hearing, is when she represents expectant moms and they don't want to do a PACA on the other side, she goes, so you just want her to trust you for what?
Yeah.
Why would she do that? She doesn't really know you.
And like, she doesn't really...
Why would she trust you like that? That's so crazy to do. Now, there's a whole issue of enforcement with PACAs.
Yeah.
That is important to talk about too. There's a lot of states that don't enforce PACAs. I think there's 29 states that do, but most of those states have stipulations that are more intended for placements for older children, maybe foster care or whatever. So kinship agreements, stuff like that. So like Indiana is, if the child was over two at the time of placement, then a PACA is enforceable. But any other time, it's not enforceable. California is enforceable at any age. New York is enforceable. And there's a little bit of a misconception on if these things are being enforced. And I think the misunderstanding is really stemmed from just a lack of knowledge about the legal system and about the civil system and not the criminal.
Yes.
This is not a criminal offense to not uphold a PACA. Yeah. And we don't want it to be. Like, I don't want my kids' parents to go to jail because I didn't,
because you didn't get your
send
12
me a picture
pictures.
Or allow me to visit. I want... The goal of adoption, you know, should be, its intention is for permanency.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want my kids' parents to be criminally prosecuted because, so that's not how it works. Enforcement works a little bit differently in the fact that, you know, most civil cases don't even make it to the courtroom at all.
Yeah.
This is something that there's mediations over. Mm-hmm. There's negotiations with opposing counsel. And sometimes there's misunderstandings to iron out.
Yeah.
And so having that counsel to help help her get that post-adoption contact agreement upheld and honored, a lot of times they need an advocate to do that and cut through the noise of the disagreements and the hurt feelings.
And the pettiness.
To have a lawyer who's going to advocate for her. Yeah. And then... What would the penalty be for not enforcing the agreement? You're talking about
fines.
Fines, minimal, but like you're talking about having mom's attorney's fees paid.
Yeah.
Until until it's it's fixed.
And I think it's important for birth moms that are listening to know that, especially if birth moms have already had, look. The thought of like working with the legal system again, if you've had past legal issues, is terrifying.
Sure.
I know that from myself because the legal process that I went through, it was very traumatic. And I am like, if I see a cop and I'm driving down the car, like the trigger is so real. And so for birth moms that have had really negative experiences with the legal system, one of the things that really, I'm glad we're having this conversation is that it's not a courthouse thing. We can come and have mediation and have some of these things to come to the table, to have someone to be an advocate for you that you probably didn't have before.
Right.
And to be able to say, these are things that are not working for me. I am missing these things. I need these things to be helpful for me.
Right.
And to have that ironed out,
right,
that you can do that without the triggering legal system process that you may think is happening.
Right. Yeah. And also if your professional's offering you a PACA, but not letting you know the status of the enforcement, that's a problem too. If you're in Arkansas, for example, they allow PACAs to be signed and decided upon, but they will not enforce them in the state of Arkansas. It's kind of more of a a passive little law that they enacted.
Yeah.
I support
this agreement
PACAs,
of faith in each other.
I support PACAs even when there's no enforcement. Yeah. I much prefer enforcement. Mm-hmm. But if that's all that you can get, I want them to know it's not enforceable. But I want there to be those set expectations.
Yeah.
And I want there to be a mutual understanding, a meeting of the minds on what this is going to look like, especially in the first few years when you're stumbling through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important to point out, because when we're talking about roles, rights, and responsibilities and our expectations and how we show up in open adoption, it is absolutely ridiculous to put, like you said, that the PACA isn't about the specific expectations of receiving the certain number of visits or the certain letter, because you have no idea how you're going to feel in 3 years out.
Right.
You don't know the grief cycles that you're going to be going through. Adoptive parents are going through maybe their own post-adoption partum stuff. They're blending their family together. Attachment is going on.
Right.
Birth moms are going through their own seasons of stuff. And so you can't, the biggest issue for me is, are we putting this expectation of openness that has to look like this with no room to shift and change?
Right.
And that's coming back to the table.
Yes. Agreement.
Yes. Yeah. And we've got to start maybe not less, because we deserve what we deserve and want, but an expectation that we have to grow into this for life.
Right.
And so let's set realistic expectations, because the other thing is that the adoptive parents are like, well, she said this is what she wanted. Mm. I'm showing up and I'm upholding my end of the deal and she's not. And then we start to get, I'm only doing this because I'm obligated to. And then there's resentment that builds.
Right. Right.
If we're not all on the same page at the beginning, we'll have adoptive parents in one-sided relationships, and it gets very complicated for them to stay in it without resentment.
Totally. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and when you are considering, like, figuring out what is your role here, what are your rights and what are your responsibilities, I think that you have to figure out what that looks like for you. But at its core, you have to honor your child and honor their desires and honor their needs and put yourself second, because that's the whole point of a parent-child dynamic.
Yeah. I didn't know, and I could get really emotional about, but I didn't know how much Derek was going to need and want me.
Oh, I never knew.
It's a lot harder for me to do the work and show up now, because I didn't know. It wasn't in the plan.
Right. Well, and that's a teaser, because later in the season, we're going to be talking about what we wish we had known.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But
he needs me, and I have an emotional obligation and to show up for him.
Right. Totally.
And
it was never, it's
easy.
Not in the paperwork.
Yeah.
It's not in the brochure.
Yeah.
It's not in the pre-adoption education.
Yeah.
But we're telling you now. So now you know, you can't unknow it. And you have to go forward.
And if you're a birth mom that has not heard anything, like, I'm just encouraging you to reach out to you. Take the first step.
You have to. Because at the end of the 18 years or however many years until contact becomes a reality for you again, if you get to that point and say, I never reached out.
Yeah, we're going to have to answer to our children too.
You can't put all the blame on the adoptive parents
at that
point. You have to. You have to shoulder that as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think you want to do that. You don't have to. If you're 10 years in and you haven't heard from them in a while, just be persistent. And I know rejection is so hard, but be persistent, because it just matters so much. It matters so much.
And at the end of the day, you want to be on the side of saying, I tried to reach out. I did what I could.
Yeah.
That's a way better spot to be in than to just say, I never reached out because they cut me out.
And it hurt my feelings.
Yeah. That's not the conversation you want to have with your child.
You have to. I think when you shift your mindset and say, I'm willing to be rejected for the benefit of my child.
Well,
it makes it easier.
When your adoptees are saying, you didn't fight for me at birth, but I watched you fight for me for 18, 20 years.
Yeah.
That goes a long way.
It does. It really does.
So, yeah. Okay.
Well,
I think that's it for now.
For this.
On kind of navigating open adoption and those expectations. These are ongoing conversations that we're always having. And as our own adoptions unfold, mm-hmm. in navigating this. It's constantly changing.
It is. Yeah.
So best that's what luck. We know now. Yeah.
Best of luck to you.
Yeah, good luck.
All right. We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.